There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action.
The Southern Beats, here we go. How about it? It is just a couple of more weekends, and then we got college football coming your way. Are we okay with that? Just a couple more, and then we're right there. I mean, it's just a couple more. So we'll be there soon enough. What's going on, everybody? It is episode 36, the Jerome Bettis episode is what we'll call it. The bus is today's episode, but it is going to be one that is going to include a preview for a team, but also as well a preview involving said team and somebody who is making it happen. We will have both of those. The preview is the Clemson Tigers today, and we are going to check in with my buddy Brad Senkiff of 105.5 The Roar there in Clemson. And also, too, Gary Stokin, the Peach Bowl president and CEO. Of course, the Peach Bowl has the college football premier kickoff game of the season, the Chick-fil-A kickoff game every single year. So that is something else that you can look forward to as well, as it is going to be a double dip this year. You're going to get two for the price of one. You're going to get Georgia and Oregon on Saturday afternoon. And then Monday night, Labor Day night, you're going to get Georgia Tech and Clemson inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So that is going to be a lot of fun. And then we're going to close it out today talking a little bit to LSU and their recruiting class, because I thought people told me that Brian Kelly couldn't recruit, and that was going to be a major issue for LSU going forward. But he is quickly putting those notions to rest, because he got a huge commitment last weekend. And also, too, just going to talk about the overall, just, you know, how people view Brian Kelly at LSU. And I don't want to spoil that right now, because I talked about it a little bit the other day, but I want to take it even a step further here. So we'll have Brad Senkiff. We'll also have Gary Stokin for you. So we got that on today's episode. But I want to start by doing one quick headline, and that is the news that broke earlier this week, and that is the Big Ten nearing a media rights agreement with Fox, CBS, and NBC, as it was at least reported not too long ago that there was a possibility the Big Ten would try to link up with NBC, kind of have a doubleheader scenario where they would be able to have Big Ten games every single week. That'd be a given. But also, too, as well, be able to have the Big Ten and Notre Dame as well. And I know a lot of people out there think, well, you know, hey, they're going to go after Notre Dame. They're going to try to get Notre Dame in their conference. But in this case right here, it was to set up a doubleheader type scenario of whenever Notre Dame doesn't have a primetime game that night, which for the most part, their games are on the afternoon. I think they usually do a 2:30 Eastern kick, just so they don't run directly ahead with the SEC and whoever ABC at that time, which, you know, the SEC right now with CBS, ABC, who they have on at that time. And then I think, you know, that's the early action for the Pac-12. So they've got their games going out there as well, and all of those different types of things. So they kind of want their own little television window, and then they're done. And your viewers then go to ESPN or ABC that night for the primetime game, which, of course, is Herb Street and Fowler, and then, you know, the college football weekend is over. But in this case right here, from what I've understood, is that it would be Fox keeping the Big Noon kickoff. So you would still have the Gus Johnson and also Joel Klatt scenario right there. So they would get the Big Noon kickoff. Then you would have the CBS portion of it, which, of course, then also as well, this is all taking over, I believe, in a couple of years after both. It's at the end of 2023 is when this would become in effect. And that is when the SEC is going to move over to ABC, because now that's going to be their big part of it, as they're going to have that coverage over there. So you have that. And then NBC would have the primetime game, which I'd have to believe out of all of this that NBC would be paying the lion's share of it, and that they would get choice of who they want to have there in that spot? Or also, too, would they even that week say, no, you know what, we're going to go with Notre Dame. We'll go ahead and let CBS or Fox, whoever wants to battle it out for the top game that week. And I'm guessing that they're going to have kind of that six-day window thing right there opening up. The only thing that I wonder with here is outside of Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, maybe Wisconsin, Michigan State, you know, are they starting to kind of jump up a little bit? Who necessarily in the Big Ten do you say, oh, man, I've got to be in front of the TV and watch, other than those teams that I just mentioned right there? Now, I get it. The same thing is kind of happening in the SEC as well, because you do have your top-tier programs that people will sit down and watch in the SEC, but I also think that you have more of them in the SEC. Just off the top of my head right now, you've got Alabama. That's one. You've got Georgia. That's two. Texas A&M, LSU. You know, maybe you could throw Tennessee in there as well. You know, Florida most years. I think that you can throw them in there as well. Ole Miss with Lane Kiffin, probably a little bit. Arkansas, they're probably not what the other ones are, but still, you get my point. I think that there is at least more value in terms of what you're watching in the SEC, and the SEC is going to continue to do what they're doing, and I'm not sure what the media rights deal is. People can tweet at me at Dan Matthews ATL with the SEC one if they're going to continue on ABC to do this, hey, we'll have a 3:30 game, or hey, we'll have a noon game, and then we'll have a top-tier 3:30 game, or we'll do the 3:30, and once a year we'll do a primetime game of Herb Street and Fowler, which I guarantee you they probably will if there is a big SEC matchup that week. Say, no, let's kick it to 7 o'clock Eastern, and let's have it at that time and have those guys on the call because they want as many eyes on it as possible. But in terms of this media rights deal, I mean, it also, too, is a little interesting from the standpoint of you're shutting out ESPN, and it's going to end a 40-year relationship that they've had with the Big Ten. And I think if nothing else as well, it kind of shows you the ever-changing landscape that is happening in sports in general, because I think if you've been paying attention that ESPN, it reaches a certain point, and then notice how people leave ESPN, because I think ESPN realizes, why are we shelling out huge money for said talent when we can find their replacement pretty easily? Because people ask all the time, oh, you know, how amazing is it to work in sports? It's awesome. It is 100% amazing. It's also, too, the fact that so many people want to do it and so many people can do it that eventually the networks look around and say, yeah, there's no need to pay this person this amount of money. That does us no good to have them around and to be able to pay out this type of money when we can get just as much a result from having somebody else in that spot as people are tuning in to watch the game, not necessarily the talent in that spot. So that's what I think that ESPN looks at it as. So then, you know, you see a lot of people go to Fox, or you see people like Mike Tirico, who gets more responsibility and goes over to NBC and is now going to be Sunday Night Football. I don't believe they're going to have him on Notre Dame now. I have not seen that. But you get my point, is that other networks, and also, too, now, you got to think about that sites are doing this with the onset of gambling. DraftKings and, you know, Bovada or anybody, I mean, maybe not Bovada as much, but DraftKings and, you know, other people out there as well with these daily fantasy sites and these, you know, enhanced gambling websites are starting to shell out a lot of money. And, I mean, you've even seen it, too, as well with people like Pat McAfee and with, you know, the Levitard show leaving ESPN and going elsewhere. So you have to factor that in as well. And I think as we continue on, I mean, we're seeing that Amazon is already doing it with the streaming platform, that we're going to see others jump into this as well and try to add, you know, live game action. And it's going to continue with the, you know, fact that people continue to cut the cable and move over to streaming. And now these leagues and these conferences will start looking around and saying, why not look that way? Because we're already seeing it. NFL Plus is starting to do it now in the NFL, Major League Baseball. I mean, you don't really even see commercials anymore. I don't even know. And people can tweet at me as well with this. I don't even know if MLB Extra Innings is around anymore. I think that Major League Baseball has pretty much said, yeah, if you want out-of-market games, then you need to get a subscription to MLB.TV. I have MLB.TV. I'm a huge baseball guy, and I use it for that said reason, that even if the Braves or Astros are not playing, I will then, you know, decide to watch the Dodgers or the Padres or the A's or the Angels or somebody else for late-night games, and the Yankees and the Mets, whoever else is out there playing this evening, then that's who I'll watch. So it's an ever-changing landscape, and it's a kind of first-of-its-kind media rights deal for the Big Ten, but it's going to be interesting to see how it all plays out, because I think that, indeed, it is something that I think the Big Ten says, hey, we've got the major cities, let's use that to our advantage. But also, too, I think it's also a thing where if you're Kevin Warren, the charges for the conference to up the level of play in said league, and that's something that I think they're going to need to try to do here in the near future. Before we get to Brad Sinkiff, I want to go through a couple of different things, and that is, number one, Nick Saban with some interesting comments the other day about tight ends, that he was asked about, you know, how has the tight end position evolved, and, you know, what exactly is the tight end position now? And I thought his answer was pretty interesting when he was saying, yeah, they're no longer just guys that put their hand in the dirt.
But now a tight end is really three things. A tight end does that sometimes. A tight end flexes out and plays like a wide receiver sometimes. A tight end is in the off-the-ball position, and he does a lot of things an old-fashioned fullback used to do.
So I brought this up on the Chuck Oliver show the other day, and I'll bring it up here again. How amazing is it that Nick Saban is being asked about offensive skill position play? Because for the longest time, what was Nick Saban thought of as? He was thought of as a guy that he wants his teams to play stifling defense. He wants huge, physical, athletic players on defense, and that's how he's going to control the game. He's going to control the line of scrimmage. He's going to beat you that way. He's going to have a running attack that is going to be incredibly tough to stop. In certain cases, they just wear you down, they grind you down, and that's how they beat you. Until he didn't. To kind of take a Chuck line right there. And in this case right here, he in 2014 decided, hey, Lane Kiffin, I need you to come join us now, even though he was already on staff as an analyst. But I need my offense to be reimagined. I need this offense to look more like the offenses that are beating us in college football, because a year later, he'd get beat by Clemson, a team that had a high-powered offense. 2019, got beat by LSU, a team with a high-powered offense. Texas A&M in 2012, beating them with a high-powered offense. A couple of times, Auburn, beating them with a high-powered running attack and a really good offense. So you catch my drift here, is I think that Nick Saban looked around and said, yeah, hey, our offense, if we want to continue to have this thing going in the direction that it's going, then we need to change the way that we run offense. And that's what they decided to do. And now they're thought of as being a premier location for wide receiver talent, for quarterback talent. Now, I mean, you had a quarterback who was up for the Heisman Trophy and one who actually won it in Bryce Young. And now, too, as well, where you get questions like this to Nick Saban, who nobody ever doubted his football acumen. But the fact now that people are looking to him of, hey, Nick, how do you do this on offense? And he is the one giving you answers. That's growth. That's evolution. That's a way of saying, hey, you know what? I need to find a way to be able to survive, because if I don't fight to survive, eventually this great run of national championships is going to run to a plateau, and I'm going to be stuck on dry land, and I need to be able to get back out into the ocean. That's what he said in that regard, where he said it's time for us to fix the way that we run our offense and to be able to kind of reimagine how we do things around here on that side of the football. And now you've seen the results be the way that they are. Another one, too, from fall camp happening is Lane Kiffin. He's got a quarterback battle going on right now, and he's trying to find the right guy for his spot. If that's the USC transfer, Jackson Dart, or if that is the returner, Luke Altmyer, who we got to see last year in the Sugar Bowl against Baylor after Matt Corral got hurt. But he said something that I thought was pretty interesting, and I liked his response to a certain point, but it was also as well that I think that Lane Kiffin is handling the quarterback position a lot like most coaches are handling the spot right now. I'll let you listen.
That's a fair question. That absolutely would have nothing to do with how we play players here. And we've got tons of examples over time. We don't care how many stars you are, where you're from, whether you're from the state, whether you're not. I mean, when I got here, I was dumb for playing the other quarterback.
Now, I get that Lane Kiffin's trying to find the right quarterback, because that is a position that is so important to find the right guy. He had a line the other day that I thought was really interesting, and that was, you've got to make sure you find the right guy, because it's not like in baseball where you have a pitcher and you can just go out there and pull him from the game. When you pull a quarterback, that's serious. Like, you're doing this because you're saying, hey, not only do I not have any other option, but I'm also doing this with the full understanding that it might do a lot to you that you don't come back from mentally, and that's tough to be able to gauge if you're a coach. And that's something that I think that Lane is trying to take into account right now, with Dart and Altmyer going against each other in this quarterback battle, but also, too, as well, that he's trying to figure out if indeed, It is going to be something that fits the team right now, because I think he's saying, hey, I can't just start this kid because he's the USC transfer, and that everybody thought that, oh, well, you know, hey, he's the guy, so he must be the guy. There's nobody else that that you're going to go with, and that's why you brought him in here. He's saying, I can't worry about that. I have to start the guy that's the right guy. But also, too, soon enough, with the transfer portal being the way it is, I have to always be thinking about my numbers at the quarterback spot, because I use the example all the time as 2019 Kirby Smart. I think that 2019 Kirby Smart putting Stetson Bennett in the SEC championship game against LSU, be it was for one or two plays, but he said the following year, I don't ever want to be in that situation ever again, where I have to go with somebody that I had to bring back from being a junior college transfer who was a one-time walk-on to now being the guy who I might have to go with for the rest of the game if my starting quarterback, Jake Fromm, can't get back into this game. So what did he do? He loaded up on the numbers, transfers, signings, all of the above, because you just worry about the numbers at that certain point. You just worry about stockpiling as many players as possible, because you know no matter what you do, somebody or some buddies are going to leave, but you just want to make sure that, hey, I'm still good in terms of my numbers. I've still got two or three good options in that room if indeed I need to go that direction. So I think that's all at play right here. All right, so let's get to the interview portion of the show today. We're going to talk first with my good buddy Brad Sinkiff of 105.5 The Roar. Then we're going to talk with President and CEO of the Peach Bowl, Gary Stokin, about the great kickoff games that they have this year, plus college football playoff semifinal coming your way as part of the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl. So first Brad, then Gary right here. This is the Southern Beat. All right, so that means we're getting closer to the season if we are talking to this man, because he is the host of the Press Box, 9 a.m. to noon, weekdays on 105.5 The Roar there in Clemson. We're going to talk some Clemson Tigers with Brad Sinkiff. Find him on Twitter, at Brad Sinkiff. Good luck trying to spell Sinkiff correctly as well as Brad. I got to believe that first days of school, those were always probably really fun times, right? That first practice of baseball season, whatever it might have been, all of those things above.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, especially in school, those first couple of days took some getting used to. But, hey, I guess DJ Rongo and I have something in common. I'm not the only thing that we have in common, me and the Clemson quarterback. But we definitely have that one.
There you go. All right, so unique names, unique spellings, pronunciations, all of those things. Yeah, any connection that you can have, that's for sure. Hey, let's start, you know, we're about a week in the fall camp. I don't know how much you've had a chance to get out to the practice facility and see Clemson and at work. If you have seen anything you've seen or even heard that surprises you about this team?
Well, I don't know if surprise is the word that I would use when I went over and saw a little bit of practice a few days ago. But the defense, the one thing that stood out to me is the depth. And it made him a little surprised at just how many guys I saw run through drills that I'm like, well, that guy can play. I got to find a way to get him on the depth chart. Clemson didn't put an official one out this summer, so where do I put this guy? Like, I found myself kind of viewing both the defensive line and the linebacking core and just going, wow, that's a lot of bodies that look in shape, that look ready to go. Like, guys are running through drills that, you know, in an order maybe I wasn't quite expecting. So I just think the overall depth of that defensive line and that linebacking group, where it's just so many guys, you're like, they're going to rotate people in at a rate that maybe we're not used to seeing in college football. You think everybody knows who Miles Murphy is and Brian Bracee. But I'm telling you, Dan, there's four or five other guys that maybe you're not familiar with or most listeners aren't familiar with. I'm going, man, people don't know who they are by the end of the year. So it is a very, very strong group on that defensive side.
And, you know, let's even talk about some of the personnel. You know, you talked about the defense a little bit. I mean, that defensive front, it seems like with Brian Bracee, Miles Murphy, and that crew up there, that really this could be a really good group. So, I mean, is this kind of hearkening back to some of those really strong defensive fronts we saw when it was Watkins and the guys that were manning that front?
Oh, clearly. This is about as talented a group as you're going to find, I think, in college football, maybe in a while in college football, from a standpoint of each one of them do something really, really well, and it's a little bit different than the other. And you put all that together, and, you know, you look at a guy like like Miles Murphy, who I feel like everybody has him on an All-American list. Everybody feels like they know who Miles Murphy is. He has fairly modest numbers when you match it with how he's built and what he should be doing last year. It's not like they were just outrageous numbers. It's because the potential and the talent is just off the charts, and he puts together just a couple little things here and there. He's a guy who's going to all of a sudden stand out with 12, 13, maybe even more sacks this season. So, you know, it's just so many different bodies that they can put out there, different styles. The packages they're going to be able to run, I'm very curious to see. It's going to be much more NFL-like from that defensive group. And you got K.J. Henry, who might be more of the edge guy who can stop the run. And then in obvious passing down situations, you bring in Xavier Thomas to just say, hey, go get the quarterback, do what you do, use your spin move or whatever else you've got in your arsenal. It's just going to be a group that can do a lot of different things and bring a lot of versatility.
And, I mean, a group that gets to see them every single day in practice, this offensive line. You know, Brad, I don't think I'm telling any lies where I say that that group last year had a pretty tough time at certain times in the season. But how much has going through those experiences, gaining that experience, and also going against this defensive line in practice every single day helped them grow?
Well, that's the hope, is that last year pays off. I mean, let's be honest. Last year was probably one of the worst years of Dabo Swinney's era with offensive linemen because he had to go through so many of them. It was never the same starting group from week to week. Somebody was always hurt. Somebody underperformed. They had to do different things, and they didn't have a true center for much of last season. They feel better about that. And start there, because you know what it's like. When you don't have a center, you don't know if you have an offensive line, because they do so much and make everything else sort of go. And if you don't have a center, you're moving guards to centers and tackles to guards. You know, so you're having to just completely rearrange your whole process from day to day, week to week. They feel like Will Putnam, who's sliding over from guard, has taken that center role and owned it since spring ball. I mean, owned it. I don't mean tried out, you know, maybe need some more work here and there. It's like he has dominated that center spot. Snaps have been good all through fall camp. Dabo Swinney said the other day that he only remembers one bad snap, and that was because the center moved too early, and they just tossed it, I guess, over the quarterback's head or whatever. So that was even a false start. So it wouldn't technically have been a snap. So obviously, they feel really good about that one position. And that just allows them to be a little more versatile at guard and tackle. So if they feel like they can get the best five on the field this year, I don't think even in fall camp last year, they felt like they knew who the best five were. And at least going into the 2022 season, they'll have a better idea, and they've got more depth, and some of that those issues will pay off. You still got to see it, though. At the end of the day, Dan, they got to perform. They got to be better than what they were last year. But I think from a starting point of the season, they're in much better shape.
Brad Sinkiff, host of the Press Box, 9 a.m. to noon weekdays, 105.5 The Roar there in upstate South Carolina, covering the Clemson Tigers. Also, a deputy editor for allclemson.com is where you can find his work. Find him on Twitter at Brad Sinkiff. Let's move off the line, but stay on offense here, Brad, and let's talk receivers. I know when I talked with Dabo Swinney at ACC kickoff, he pointed out that was a group that had a lot of inexperience last year, and partially probably a huge reason why the offense looked the way it did early on in the season. But it seems like that the team kind of really stepped it to a new gear there in November and December last season and really finished strong. How key was that group to being able to find that next step, but also to what does it mean having those guys back this season?
Well, I think where they found something in terms of their receivers late last year was the development of Dakari Collins and Bo Collins, two guys who are true freshmen, who quite frankly had to play because there was no one else. I mean, literally, Dan, there was no one else who could play. I remember a game, it was the two freshmen, Collins and Will Sweeney, who spent about 7 years on the football team with his dad, Dabo. So that's how dire things got from an injury standpoint. They at least start this year healthier. Now, I still have a lot of reservations about this position. This is the one position where when I walked around the field at practice earlier this week, that when I went by the receivers, I didn't feel like there was an alpha. I didn't feel like there was that guy. You know, every year there's always been a T. Higgins or a Justin Ross or a Mike Williams. You just go down the line for years, Sammy Watkins, you go back to Nuke Hopkins. There's always been an alpha on that end of the field, and there just isn't one right now. Maybe it develops. Maybe it's Bo Collins, who I just talked about. Maybe it's Joseph Ngata finally, after 3 or 4 years, putting it all together and becoming that kind of star that Dabo Swinney thinks he can be. Maybe he becomes the alpha. But there isn't one today. Maybe it's Adam Randall, a freshman who's coming back from an ACL tear in the spring, who was clocked as the fastest wide receiver on the field, despite the ACL issue. He'll be back sometime in September. So they've got to develop that guy. I'm not saying that guy's got to be, you know, a 1,000-yard receiver and catch 14 touchdowns. I'm not saying that. But they need to know who the go-to guy is in that room. And right now, they don't have it. There's still some development that needs to take place there.
Couple more for Brad Sinkiff here again, host of the Press Box, 9 a.m. the noon weekdays, 105.5 The Roar in Clemson. Find him on Twitter at Brad Sinkiff. One of them is, you know, you talked about it a little bit, Brad. That's the high praises this preseason. Preseason polls, I heard what Dabo had to say about it the other day, but how is the program handling this type of expectation after, by their standards, a disappointing 2021?
To be honest with you, I think it's pretty easy for this team not to say, hey, we're number four in the country, and people think we're going back to the playoff, and people think we're going to win the ACC, and everybody picked us in Charlotte at the media event. I think all of that means nothing to them right now because of the disappointment of last year. I mean, that's crazy to say. And a team went 10-3, and the players are disappointed, but they were. You know, this is a team that has a certain expectation, a standard, and there's a lot of guys on this team. They hated to be the group that didn't go to the playoff. You know, like they were. Some of these guys do not want to be remembered as that. Guys like KJ Henry and Miles Murphy and Brian Brzee and some of these guys who aren't going to be around next year, they don't want to be that group again. And so they wanted in a certain focus and a certain hunger. In fact, I talked to somebody who's been at every practice and seen every rep for the entirety of what's going on at fall camp. And I asked them, what have you seen? And the word they could give me was focus. They just looked, there was a different focus about them. And I noticed it some, too, in the limited time I saw. There's a certain, like, professionalism about this group. Not a lot of guys dancing, not a lot of guys chit-chatting. They're not talking about what they're going to eat for dinner or who they're hanging out with after practice is over. It was all business on the field, and that's the mentality they've taken. And when you do that, you sort of close out all the outside noise. So this is a very different group than I think what you saw a year ago, where they may have been a little complacent. They may have been a little overconfident. They may have paid attention to too many past accolades. That's not this group.
One final one for you. It's a two-parter, and that is confidence in DJ Uiagalelei, that he's going to be the quarterback from game one until the end of the season. And the other part is, how do you see Cade Klubnik factoring into this offense this season?
Both great questions. You know, in terms of confidence with DJ, it starts high, and here's the reason why. He went out and he lost 30 pounds. He put in a ton of work in the offseason. He worked on his mechanics. He worked on his footwork. He showed that he cares, right? A guy that's just like, whatever. I had a bad year. You know, I'll shake it off. I'll be fine. Don't worry about it. That's the attitude he took. If he had done that and I'd not heard about his work ethic in the offseason, I'd be greatly concerned about this quarterback position. I'd be like, okay, DJ didn't take it seriously. This is Kenny Clinton's job by, like, week two. You know, like, that would be the mentality. But the players have talked about his improvement. The coaches have talked about it. I think he gets the benefit of the doubt. I think you give him an opportunity to show that he has put in the hard work. You know, we always talk about that. You're always rewarded for hard work. Reward him with the chance to keep the job. And I think that's the way the coaches have approached it. I'm maybe not as confident as the coaches, because here's what's going to happen. Week one against Georgia Tech, there's going to be a package, maybe two, maybe three, where Cade Klubnik, the true freshman, comes in the game. And he might have some success. He's got great running ability. They're going to want to use his legs and sort of lull the defense a little bit and then maybe throw over the top of him, like Cade, show off his arm. He's got good timing on his throws. I've heard very positive things about his grasp of the offense. He is going to get on the football field. The question is, what happens when he's not? What if he does lead a drive or two and then DJ doesn't and then comes and settles for a field goal or they go three and out? Then that's where the tough decision is going to come in for this coaching staff. So it's going to be up to DJ to hold him off, but I think the confidence level from the coaches and the players is what matters now. I still think there's a point in this season where DJ has a bad game, is in a bad situation, struggles, and I think Kate gets the opportunity. opportunity. I can't tell you what game that's going to be, Dan, but I think it's going to happen.
Brad, appreciate the time, buddy.
Yeah, no problem, Dan. Anytime.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over a million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Well, it's a pleasure right now to be joined by a man who makes a lot of things happen in college football, especially in the southeastern part of the country. In Atlanta with the Peach Bowl, he is president and CEO Gary Stokin. Gary, appreciate the time as always. A little busy this time of year for you, but that's got to be a really good thing for you and your staff, right?
It's a great time of the year, right, Dan? We just got through talking season, and now camps have started, and we're a little bit over 3 weeks till the kickoff for college football.
Yeah, and let's talk about the kickoff for college football because, you know, it's been a game that really now, whenever the college football schedules are released, and we know what's coming up Labor Day weekend every single year, I think the first thing, at least that I do, is I look to see who's coming to Atlanta, who's coming to Mercedes-Benz Stadium, because that's the type of game that you all have created over there at the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl with the kickoff game. How nice is it to think that you guys have started this trend and have seen it grow all throughout the game now?
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Dan. Yeah, it was an interesting story. We had made a bid for the national championship game and to be the fifth bowl in the old BCS back in 2006. And the next year, the NCAA allocated that 12th game to the college football schedule. So strategically, I told my board, I said, well, if they're not going to let us in the BCS on the backside, we're going to start the BCS Bowl on the front side. And so about the same time, we brought the College Football Hall of Fame to Atlanta, and we basically got Clemson through Terry Don Phillips, the AD. They were ranked number 9, and we got Alabama. Nick Saban, I helped him out when he was at LSU, get to the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl in 2000. And he said he'd come over to play. It was his second year. He had just finished 7-6 after losing to Louisiana Monroe in his first year, and came over, and they beat Clemson 34-10. And Nick would tell you that was the start of the run they've been on ever since. So, you know, to have, you know, that history, to really create the opportunity for Alabama to change the face of college football on the front side of the season, to where now you've got Notre Dame going to Ohio State week one. Week two, Alabama's at Texas. It really has changed the way people look at scheduling. And I really think with the advent of the CFP, it's really helped the CFP selection committee with a major data point.
And, I mean, you know, one of the things that I think that you brought up there too, Gary, is that the importance of games like this now. That, I mean, it used to be you had to go to schools, hey, would you like to play in our game? It was almost kind of a convincing, and correct me if I'm wrong, where now, I mean, is it almost that schools are getting in touch with you saying, we want to be in Atlanta Labor Day weekend, we want to play in this game?
Well, that's a great point, Dan. It's a great illustration of what happened this year. On both sides, really. The way we got Georgia was Kirby Smart, when he got the job at Georgia, he had been an assistant for a long time with Nick Saban in Alabama and had seen the implications and the positive ramifications of playing in our Chick-fil-A kickoff game. And so he told me, he said, Gary, we'll play in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game as many times as you'll have us. And so we scheduled him in 20, which unfortunately was canceled due to COVID. we scheduled him in 22 this game, and then we scheduled him in 24 to play against Clemson, which will be a blockbuster, you know, top five opening game. So that's how Georgia got done, but it illustrates your point. And then on the Oregon side, I didn't know Mario Cristobal, went out to the Pac-12 meetings in 2019, met him and said, hey, I know, you know, you've played in our Chick-fil-A kickoff game. We have Kirby and Georgia coming in 2022. I looked at the schedules. You have an opening. I know you know Kirby, and I know you know what the Chick-fil-A kickoff games can do for a team. How'd you like to play against Kirby in Georgia? He said, Gary, I love Kirby. I'd love to compete against him. You know, we're trying to build something similar to what, you know, Kirby's trying to do and what Nick did at Alabama. And so by 22, we'll be ready. We're having success in recruiting, and we'd love to compete against Georgia in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game. So you're right. Those guys had seen what the ramifications were positively. And, you know, we got people that when we talk to them, they're interested. And if it doesn't work that year, they, you know, they want to know what other openings we have. So it's really become a little bit easier in some sense because people are interested. Become a little bit harder in the way that people are scheduling and with the unknown of the expansion of conferences and how many league games, conference games they'll play.
Gary Stokin again, the Peach Bowl president and CEO, joining us. And Gary, permission to brag on your not only bowl game, but the kickoff game in general. As the Chick-fil-A kickoff game is the nation's longest running kickoff game and has absolutely reshaped the opening weekend of college football. Over 17 games have been played since 2008 in both the old Georgia Dome and Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The game has regularly hosted the nation's top teams and has drawn 1.1 million fans, 87.4 million television viewers, and distributed $101.3 million in team payments and created an additional $498.5 million in economic impact. It's hard to argue with those numbers, isn't it, Gary?
Well, I tell you, it's interesting this year. Three of the games that we have, the two Chick-fil-A kickoff games, and at the end of the year, the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, five of the six teams in those three games are all going to be ranked in the top 10. So that's some quality football, obviously. We've announced that we've sold all three of them out already. And that, along with the SEC Championship game, which will have two top 10 teams, that's four of the top six conventions in the fourth largest convention town in the United States, which is Atlanta, Georgia, behind Las Vegas, Chicago, and Orlando. So when you think about college football, you know, Atlanta is really lucky to have four huge events like that, and they happen on an annual basis. And that's why I think a lot of media have pointed out that Atlanta certainly is the capital of college football.
So you told the story a little bit, and Gary, I remembered being in that press conference there at the old Georgia Dome after Georgia had just beaten North Carolina, where Kirby Smart had said, we'll play in this game every single year. I remember you in the back of the room saying, we'll sign that deal right now. So you get Georgia back in this game. What does it mean to get them back and playing inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium to start the season?
Well, it's so ironic. You know, every one of these games has its own special story, like your own children and their own background. And this one is unique in that who would ever thought that, number one, Georgia, you know, wins the national championship and comes back to play in the Chick-fil-A kickoff game, their first game after winning the national championship. Number two, who would ever believe that Dan Lanning, the defensive coordinator on the national championship team, would wind up being the coach at Oregon to play against Kirby, his friend, and a lot of the kids he's recruited and help win a national championship. And then who would ever thought Bo Nix, who quarterbacked Auburn against Georgia for a couple of years, would wind up being probably the quarterback at Oregon to play against Georgia. So there's so many great stories here. And certainly, as Kirby would tell you, you know, they're ranked in the top five, but they're not defending anything because this team is unique. It's not won the national championship. But, you know, they'd like to have the opportunity to play three times in Atlanta this year, one in our Chick-fil-A kickoff game, two in the SEC championship, and three in our Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, which is a CFP semifinal this year.
Yeah, I don't think Kirby ever turns down opportunities to play in Atlanta. That is for sure. You touched on it a little bit, and that is getting Oregon to come across the country and play in a game like this. What has the response been so far from the Ducks fan base leading up to this game?
Well, it's interesting. You always, you know, have to do the financial deal with the athletic director. And Rob Mullins, who spent a lot of years at Kentucky, is a good friend and knows, obviously, SEC football. You know, when we talked about tickets and what their needs were, I said, you know, how many tickets do you want? I'll talk to you first before I talk to Georgia. And he said, well, we could use 6,000 tickets. Well, when they put the tickets on sale, they sold out in 3 days for this game. So I think there's going to be a lot more than 6,000 Oregon people in the crowd. And certainly there should be, because they're, along with Utah, probably the favorites to play in the Pac-12 championship game. So, you know, Oregon is a good team. You know, Dan's first head coaching job, first game. And again, it's ironic because Kirby's first game as a head coach was against North Carolina in our Chick-fil-A kickoff game as well. So many great stories. We're so blessed to have, you know, someone like Kirby Smart that really wants to support us. I'd love to support he and Georgia even more by getting the Georgia-Florida game up here one of these years too.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I think that would be something that, yeah, not only he, but Georgia fans, I think, would obviously be a huge fan of that happening as well. Gary Stokin again, Peach Bowl president and CEO, joining us here on the Southern Beat. You know, let's talk about the game on Monday, too, as well, of getting two proud ACC programs to play in said game. And Georgia Tech, I mean, all they have to do really is just hop on a bus and go a couple of blocks, and they're right there at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. So what does that mean to get them in this game, but also to Clemson off of the recent success they've had over the years?
Yeah, Clemson, you know, a lot of people have them ranked fourth or fifth in the country preseason. And Georgia Tech, give Todd Stansberry all the credit that, you know, he was interested in playing in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And we had talked with him and with the ACC. With the ACC TV contract, they own the exclusive rights to that Labor Day primetime TV slot on ESPN that's unopposed. So it's a great slot for, you know, at the end of the weekend, people have kind of gotten through their picnic or what they're going to do for Labor Day, and they settle in. And here you go, at 8 o'clock, there's a college football game on, our Chick-fil-A kickoff game. This year will be Clemson and Georgia Tech. First time we've ever had an ACC opening game, a conference game, to start the season. But the ACC saw the opportunity to put Clemson, Georgia Tech in Atlanta. Todd wanted to play in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And so, you know, we've got a capacity crowd of that game as well. And I think it's going to be a great way to open the ACC season.
Yeah, I mean, I should have asked this, you know, a little earlier as well, but when you put together matchups like this, I mean, obviously proximity, that's got to help, you know, prestige of the programs, same deal as well. But is there any criteria that necessarily I'm missing that goes into you and your staff trying to find the best matchups for this game?
Well, what I tried to do is I try and look at the coaches' contracts. I look at the schedules and who has openings and when. I look at the rest of their schedule. If, you know, if they've got two Power 5 teams on their schedule, they're not going to want a third. I also look at what recruiting they've done and where they could be recruiting-wise. A lot of times, sometimes, you know, better lucky than good. But, you know, we try and do our homework and then go out and approach people. We've been blessed in that with the ACC and the SEC, because they only have eight conference games. As an AD, if you schedule seven games at home, you make your budget. And so you have one game left if you're in the ACC and SEC, and that's typically the game we've gone after. Now, who knows what the future scheduling will be like? And, you know, with the home and homes that a lot of ADs have scheduled now, because I think they looked at the CFP potentially expanding to 12 teams, and you could still lose a conference game and lose a tough non-conference game. and still get into the playoffs with two losses in the future if they go to 12. But right now with four, no team has ever gotten in with two losses. So, you know, the schedule moving forward, what the conference do in that respect, what CFP does with its playoff, those are all going to dictate future opportunities to continue the Chick-fil-A kickoff game.
One final one for you again, Gary Stokin joining us here on the Southern Beat. He is the president and CEO of the Peach Bowl. And that is, I mean, you touched on it a little bit, the added excitement of having a college football playoff semifinal game here in Mercedes-Benz Stadium in addition to these two games.
Yeah, this is going to be a great season for us. We're calling it our record season coming out of COVID, where we've got three sellouts, five of the six teams in the top 10, having number one against four, two against three to celebrate New Year's Eve, December 31st in Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz Stadium. It's a great way to end the year. So it's going to be exciting. We've had, two semis so far. Both times we've had the number one team in the country playing the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, which, you know, it's come a long way since 1998 when I took over. Having Alabama, Washington in the first semi, and then LSU, Oklahoma in the second semi, you know, those are the type of huge games with huge ramifications on college football that we'll see December 31st.
Always looking forward to it. Always a great chance to catch up with you, Gary, as it's going to be a lot of fun the Labor Day weekend inside Mercedes-Benz Stadium, but also, too, at the end of the season when we see two teams, one moving on to the college football playoff final. It's going to be an exciting time for you and your staff. So thank you so much for your time today. Always great to catch up with you, and let's do it again hopefully here pretty soon.
Well, Dan, thanks for having us. Really appreciate what you and Chuck do with college football. It means a lot to us to promote the game, and we'll look forward to hosting you on September 3rd and 5th in Atlanta in Mercedes-Benz Stadium.
Absolutely. We always look forward to it. Gary Stokin. All right, huge thanks to both Brad and Gary for joining me this week on the show. Always a great chance to be able to catch up with two really good guys, as Brad with 105.5 The Roar. Also, allclemson.com. He is the deputy editor for that site. So he has been somebody that's been covering Clemson for some time, although the first time I ever met Brad, I think he was a local newspaper guy covering South Carolina at the time. But he is somebody who has been in the Palmetto State for some time, so always great to be able to catch up with him. Again, at Brad Senkiff is how you find him. And again, you know what? I'll give you a couple of bucks if you know how to spell Senkiff, because at least the phonetic spelling does not match the actual spelling. So find Brad on Twitter. And then Gary Stokin, always great to be able to catch up with Gary. Got to know him over the years, and he is truly somebody that is just unreal in terms of his experience in not only the business of running a bowl game, but also, too, are we aware that Gary Stokin was almost the reason that Michael Jordan was close to signing with Adidas, because he worked for the apparel giant for some time and had even talked with Michael. If you ever have a chance to listen to Gary's story about that, I actually suggest you do so. So hopefully I'm not misquoting in that regard, but Gary is just a fascinating person nonetheless, and always great to be able to catch up with him. So both of those guys, great to be able to talk with them. But I want to finish now with kind of the misnomers out there about Brian Kelly. And I understand that right now is a chance, if you're an LSU fan who was huge on the hire of Brian Kelly, you're kind of thumbing your nose at everybody, especially with the news last week of top-tier wide receiver Shelton Sampson Jr. out of Baton Rouge Catholic High School there in the capital city of Louisiana, five-star receiver, number four receiver in the country, number three overall prospect in the state, 33rd overall prospect in the country, picking LSU, and now he's putting his best recruiting tactic in to try to be able to try to get others to come to Baton Rouge as well. And that was the thing that it was a little bit of a concern at the time if you were an LSU fan, because I remember talking with, I believe it was Sonny Shipp of Go 24/7, and asking him, was there any angst amongst the fan base that the recruiting class for a little bit of the time was starting to look like a Notre Dame class, because you were seeing guys from Missouri, Minnesota, Maryland, Indiana, California, and you know, Texas has also been an area that LSU has recruited for some time, but it was looking a lot like a national recruiting class. But ever since then, it has been even more prospects out of the state of Georgia, four out of the state of Georgia, and now six in the state of Louisiana. And I said that the number one thing in the state of Louisiana, we've had Matt Moscona on with us before, and Scone has talked about just the tight-knit community that is Louisiana high school coaches, especially in New Orleans, that is a community that definitely looks out for each other and is something that if you're good with a bunch of the coaches in that area, they'll vouch for you and they'll say, yeah, hey, you know what? That coach comes into your school halls and starts asking about a player, work with them a little bit because they're good guys. They're going to treat your players right. So that is something that I think, if nothing else, at the beginning that Brian Kelly was having to try to do was he was trying to gain the trust of the coaches in the area. Now, when you're at a school like Notre Dame, you know most of these coaches already. You can't tell me that Brian Kelly on recruiting trips hadn't been through some of the hallways there of, you know, wherever he might have been there in New Orleans trying to see if certain players wanted to come play at LSU, or even Evangel Christian when Evangel was really good, or whoever it is out there in the state of Louisiana. So he had done that before. Now he had to make them believe that he had the right vision for LSU and to be able to keep kids in state from going to Alabama or going to Georgia or going to Texas or Texas A&M, Clemson, whoever else might be calling for certain players. Because I think that LSU is a lot like a school like Georgia or even like Alabama or any of the major state universities that have had a lot of success in certain states, that you do have kids that grow up saying, man, I really want to go play at LSU one day. You had kids in the state of Texas. I really want to go play at Texas one day. It kind of just depends in some of these states that the household you grew up in. If you grew up in a household of Alabama fans, then you probably wanted to go play at Alabama. If you grew up in a household of Auburn fans, then you probably wanted to go play at Auburn. And, you know, same with Texas and Texas A&M and Florida, Florida State, Miami, you know, and in South Carolina and Clemson. You get my drift here. But in Louisiana, they don't really have that rivalry in their state to have to battle with, because you don't get kids growing up saying, oh, I want to go play at Tulane. You get kids who, if they've got the grades and they've got the ability, then yeah, you go play at Tulane. But for the most part, you get kids in the state where it kind of reminds me of what Jeremy Pruitt said when he took over as defensive coordinator at Georgia. And he was at the podium at the time with the press conference with Mark Richt when they were announcing the hire. And he said, you know, one thing I've noticed about recruiting the state, all the kids want to go to Georgia. And Richt kind of piped in and said, most of them do. Saying, yeah, you know, you're not wrong. Most kids grow up here wanting to come play here. But in Louisiana, for the most part, that is the case. If you grew up in Louisiana, you probably wanted to go play at LSU. And now that's something that Brian Kelly is starting to tap into. And I think he will continue to tap into, because despite what people think, and I've had the hot takes come at me, he's not going to work out at LSU. How many people said that about Nick Saban when he came down from Michigan State? His resume wasn't all that great. How many people said that when Les Miles came over from Oklahoma State? People, you know, he had some good years at Oklahoma State, but for the most part, you get my point that people who act like Louisiana is this, like, you know, foreign country that only people who have been born and raised and lived in southern Louisiana their entire life are the only people that can have success there. The proof is in the pudding. I mean, for the two names that I just brought up, that's one. You know, Dale Brown in basketball, he was a guy from the Dakotas who came down to coach at LSU years ago. Skip Burtman, he was a guy that was a high school coach in Miami and then was an assistant coach for Ron Frazier at Miami before he came to LSU. So you've had people from all over the country come into LSU and have success, and there's no reason to believe that Brian Kelly can't do the same thing, because what has Brian Kelly proven during his time? He's going to run a very good program. He's going to run a program that develops players, and he's also going to run a program that wins. Because before he got to Notre Dame, they weren't having this success. You can give me the Charlie Weiss years. They weren't having the amount of success that Notre Dame had where they were making the college football playoff. Now, granted, once they made it into the college football playoff, it didn't necessarily go their way, but still, he got them into the college football playoff. The door was open, and at least if nothing else, he's showed people that, hey, Notre Dame can win. Notre Dame can get into these situations of playing for a national championship. So now he goes to LSU where he doesn't have to worry about the recruiting and you know, the academic restrictions that maybe he would have at Notre Dame. Because I would say at certain schools, there are some that more than others, you have to, hey, let's really see what their academics are and go from there. Stanford is one of them. I mean, you know, Michigan to a certain point is one of them. Virginia. I mean, you know, there are certain Duke. I mean, the schools are out there. I mean, I said Tulane earlier, Rice. I mean, schools that really do prioritize academics, and Notre Dame does. There are valedictorians who don't get into Notre Dame. There are kids who have great SATs and great GPAs that don't get into Notre Dame. So it just shows you how tough it is to get into that school. And that was something that he had to deal with. So at LSU, he's not going to have to deal with it like he did at Notre Dame. So that's something else that I think will help. And I also think as well that I think that at LSU, there is just such a yearning for a well-run, organized program and a well-run organization. And I think that that's something else that he's going to bring. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the recruiting wins are starting to come in for Brian Kelly. I think he will continue to have them. I think if he can have a good start to the season and be able to have, when he has on-campus visits during the season, have kids see, you know, Death Valley rocking again and being what it is supposed to be, because LSU is supposed to be a top-tier program. There's no reason to believe that it can't. The in-state talent is good enough. The talent and proximity in the Houston area and in East Texas, the same deal. Going outside the state to Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida, all of those areas, it's the same deal. And you're a national brand too, because when you win national championships, you become a national brand. And that's what LSU is. And I think that Brian Kelly will have that here in short order. All right, I want to thank everybody that makes this show possible. I want to thank Brad Sinkiff again of 105.5 The Roar. I want to thank Gary Stokin as well for joining me on episode 36 of The Southern Beat. We are getting even closer. It's almost time, kids. It's almost time. So be patient. We're almost to that point, as we will be here as you listen to this. We are 2 Saturdays away from week 0 games, and then we are 3 weeks away from college football kicking off in honesty. And having a lot of fun looking forward to that. Until episode 37, this is Dan Matthews, the Southern Beat. Take it easy, everyone.
There are so many reasons to love Subaru of Gwinnett. And this April, Subaru of Gwinnett is working hand-in-hand with the community, because Subaru loves the earth. From being the largest corporate donor to the National Parks Foundation to planting over 1 million trees, we wrap our arms around the community. It's part of the Subaru Love Promise, our commitment to improving lives in the communities where we live and work. And it's just one reason why Subaru is more than a car company. Visit Subaru of Gwinnett on Satellite Boulevard in Duluth to learn more about how we're taking action. The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves. And people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY. And there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required. And they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.